Attention, men. Are you wanting to break free from porn or other unwanted sexual behaviors, but finding it seemingly impossible to quit? If so, we can help. My name is Jonathan Daugherty, the founder of Gateway to Freedom. This 3-day workshop is for any man who wants to overcome any kind of unwanted sexual behavior. So whether you're married, single, or divorced, this powerful and proven intensive weekend will help you uncover what is at the root of your struggle and discover the man God always created you to be. Space is limited, so call us today at 210-822-8201 to register. That's 210-822-8201, or visit bebroken.org/GTF.
Have I really stepped into greater healing for that trauma? Or have I just simply, hey, I had some bad things happen, and that's probably part of the reason why I struggled with pornography or sex? If we can dive a little deeper into not only understanding that, but understanding how we are now perpetrating that trauma or passing along that trauma to our kids in some way. Maybe it's partly in our genes, but how can we begin intervening?
Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another episode of the PSR Podcast, which is a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries. In today's episode, I sit down with Sam Black to explore the fascinating and deeply personal topic of generational trauma and its connection to addiction recovery in men. Sam shares his own journey with pornography addiction and how it led him to investigate patterns passed down through families. We dive into compelling scientific research, including studies on worms and mice, that mirrors what Scripture has long taught about inherited brokenness. We also discuss practical tools like self-awareness, emotional regulation, and empathetic parenting to help break these cycles and create lasting healing for future generations. To learn about some of the recovery resources provided by Covenant Eyes, visit CovenantEyes.com. And if you'd like to try out Covenant Eyes free for 30 days, use the promo code BEBROKEN when you subscribe. For additional resources, visit BEBROKEN.org or check out some of the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And of course, friends, I'm always going to invite you to rate and review the podcast after listening, especially on Apple and Spotify. Now, let's dive into today's fascinating and helpful conversation with Sam. Well, all right. We have back on the program with us, Sam Black. Sam, how are you doing today?
It's great to be here, Jonathan. Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. We had the honor of getting having our first granddaughter last year. And she just, as we're doing this recording, she just recently turned 9 months. And so we're enjoying all that. So life is good in the Daugherty home.
I know what that means. My grandson is turning 2 this month.
Well, you know what? I actually think speaking of grandchildren is the perfect segue to something we're going to talk about today, because we're going to be talking about generations and generational impact and things like generational trauma. And how do we address this in a recovery mindset that goes beyond us just thinking about our personal healing or our personal, maybe what we need to deal with in terms of our out of control behaviors or whatever. So I'm looking forward to this conversation, but I first want to ask you, Sam, how did this even start to get onto your radar to start thinking about recovery, maybe in the perspective or through the lens of generations?
You know, it comes, I believe, from my own personal experience, recognizing that through my porn addiction, my deep struggles, the trauma that I experienced as a child, some of the things I would do as a dad were things that I said I would never do. Why was I doing those? And then as I learned in more deeply about my own father's trauma and his father's trauma, it made me think about Numbers and Exodus, about how the Bible talks about how iniquity and this pain is visited on the second and third generations. And so I have this natural curiosity, and for that to just, I wanted to dig deeper. I totally believe that what the Scripture is teaching us is something's going on here. How do we explain that? How do we dive deeper into that? How do I understand that in some maybe lay terms or even scientific terms that really back up what Scripture is telling us?
Yeah. Well, so let's go there. First of all, let's talk about, I'd like to get some definitions here. So, I mean, I don't want to just take it for granted that when we say something like generations, that people maybe even know exactly what we're talking about there. And also then I want to talk about defining trauma as well, because that's one element that we want to talk about that can be a generational thing in terms of passing down hurts, passing down certain aspects of brokenness. So can you give us some definitions of terms here?
All right. And the first one was what is, or the second one was what is trauma? And I'd like to boil them down to lax and wax. Wax are things that were medium to high intensity impact, yelling, hitting, sexual abuse, harm, that they may have been individual instances, but it could also be low intensity that were happened over and over and over again. And so wax are things that are done to you, and lax are things that you should have received but didn't. Maybe it was the right clothing and food and secure environment and protection, etc. Helping you with even things as simply as schoolwork or being there for you when you're feeling upset as a child. Were they there to help you moderate your moods? Because children can't actually do that on themselves. Adults are there to help a child actually navigate their emotions. So maybe if you didn't receive that, and you should have, well, that's what I would call lack. Those are things that I would list into trauma. Generations, of course, I would simply put as one generation after the other. Parent, grandparent, great-grandparent, all the way down to children, right?
Yeah. And I mean, for me, I like, my brain likes to keep things simple. And I like to say a generation is the difference between parent and child. You know, it's like,
thank you. So
and that perpetuates then to, like you said, grandparents, great-grandparents, but just the idea of that, the difference between the parent and child. So, and that's really what you're talking about here, right? Is that the child is receiving generational impact from parents and grandparents, because whatever the parent is passing on to the child, they receive from their parent and their parent and their parent. So there's a sense in which it's environmental is some of this, right? Is what you're talking about. Can you maybe talk about the difference between what we receive and what we experience environmentally regarding some of the generational things, and then maybe some of what is part of us being born as someone that is ultimately Adam's son, and there's a sin nature that we have. So there's aspects to this that are maybe, you know, it's the nature-nurture thing in some ways, that argument between what is something that I have inherited from my spiritual father, Adam, in the sense of what that fall represented. But then also there's that environmental factor. And I think that's probably the main thing you want to address. Is that correct? Kind of what are those environmental impacts?
And environmental, I would put in relational. Environmental, relational. Actually, probably more relational than in environmental. Of course, we were born into sin. We have inherited a sin nature. Paul talks about this exclusively, right? About there's something at war inside of me that wants to do not what is right, but what I say that I don't want to do. And yet I do it anyway. So we certainly in our addictions have understood that there have been parts of me that I did not want any part of that. But there was a sin nature that was dragging me toward pornography or sexually acting out, things that I had promised myself and God and others I would never do again. And yet there was a repetition. But there is also things that we're inheriting, and it can be that we're inheriting relationally from the experiences of those who came before us. And I think this is the time where we can begin to nerd out, if that's okay. We're going to nerd out. Are you ready to nerd out with me, Jonathan?
I was hoping so. That means you're bringing research in, right? Is that what you're going to say?
We're going to bring in some research, and we're going to talk about just some fascinating things that at least make you begin thinking that, maybe I didn't get here on my own. However, that means whatever I'm doing is going to have an impact not just on my children, but on my grandchildren. What does my recovery mean to me? Is it just about changing some certain behaviors? If it is, you're missing an opportunity to create meaningful change, not only in your life, not only to enrich your life with beautiful relationships with your kids and your grandkids, but for generations after you're gone. And so I think this is exciting. So we're going to nerd out here a little bit. First, we're going to talk about worms. And you think, well, Sam, come on, I'm brighter than a worm. But bear with me here. We're going to talk about worms first. They had done some studies with freshwater flatworms called planaria. And what they had done, operant conditional training with them, and they had associated a flashing light with an electric shock. And so these worms would get the shock along with the flashing light, and after a while, they just needed the flashing light. And so they naturally repelled from that flashing light. Great. We just taught some worms the fear light. Eventually, they decided, well, let's cut these worms in half. They're really nice scientists, right? So they cut these worms in half, and the heads grow tails, and the tails grow heads. And that generation of worms also fears the light. Well, okay, so the tail remembered what the head remembered. Okay, we're there. Then they took the worms that they had trained conditioning with this operant conditioning, and they ground them up. And they fed them to worms who had never experienced this kind of training before. But these worms don't have the lactic acids and stuff in their stomach like we do, so it doesn't process it the same way. So these new worms who ate the ground-up worms suddenly began fearing the flashing light. They didn't before, but now they do. Crazy, right? Is this part of just simply God's design that this generational thing is coming generation after generation? So then they took mice. Mice are little more
advanced.
Yes, so they're a little more advanced than worms, and they taught the worms that if they smelled this chemical that smelled a little like cherries, if they smelled that chemical, then they were going to get a shock. And so every time those rats smelled that chemical and got a shock, they would get a startle response. Turns out they then took those male rats and bred them with female rats who had not experienced any of the shock. But the children of those male rats who had been shocked when smelling cherries, they feared the smell of cherries as well. They got the same startle response, even though they had never been shocked. And it didn't just happen to their children, it also happened to the third generation of rats. Literally, we're seeing, I believe, God's design in nature. Now, let's take this on to human beings. And we can't chop up human beings. that cannibalism doesn't work, right? So, and we can't begin shocking generations of people. So what they did was they found that parental styles. There's authoritarian parenting and authoritative parenting. We're familiar with this, right? An authoritarian parent, strict, has no rules to bend, maybe harsh in voice, tone, even physically. Authoritative parenting is, hey, let's talk about this. I'm here to help you and support you, but there are rules because I'm here to protect you. I'm here to care for you. That's not permissive parenting. Permissive parenting says, I'm just sort of checked out and you can do whatever you want to do and it's okay, whatever you say, right?
Kind of find your own way, right?
Right. Yeah. Multiple studies showed over and over again, they did this with in Australia, they did it in the United States, they did it poor neighborhoods and wealthy neighborhoods, and they found that authoritarian parenting was the most sticky. And those parents were more likely to be, those children and parents were more likely to be referred to CPS and those kinds of things. So there were some really impactful things that were going on. Authoritative parenting, authoritative parenting was also lasting three generations, at least three generations. In fact, if a mother had had an abusive experience with their father, they had grown up in an abusive relationship, it was more likely that their child would experience depression and anxiety by a large extent, even taking into account whether the mother was maybe more harsh or anything like that. We were passing down these memories either within our body in some way. That there's beliefs that, well, maybe the memory lives in the left hemisphere of the brain, where our words can explicitly describe memory. Or maybe it's on the right hemisphere of the brain where it holds implicit memory with emotions, or that it's in our genes, or that it's actually tied into our muscles, that way our muscle fibers actually are bringing this in. So whatever it is, we are passing on from one generation to the next trauma that doesn't have to be there. And authoritative parenting, though less sticky, generation after generation are more likely to pass on authoritative and caring parenting. Now, the crazy thing is that authoritarian parenting is more sticky than authoritative. So we have to not only nurture our own children, but we also have to, they found that grandparents who helped nurture their grandchildren had a greater impact on that child having, and here's the beauty of all this. Those kids then had less risky behaviors, less drug abuse, fewer sexual partners, higher grades, everything else panned out better for those children. So you as a dad right now listening, I think this is what I'm trying to get to, is that your recovery has likely included your discovery that you've experienced some trauma in your life. What have you done with that trauma? Have you left it there? Have you said, oh yeah, I've told my story to some guys in my group, but I've never really gone further to really understand how that trauma impacts what I say and what I do, how I react? Have I really stepped into greater healing for that trauma? Or have I just simply, hey, I had some bad things happen and that's probably part of the reason why I struggled with pornography or sex? If we can dive a little deeper into not only understanding that, but understanding how we are now perpetrating that trauma or passing along that trauma to our kids in some way, maybe it's partly in our genes, but how can we begin intervening? Now, before we step into the intervening part, because there's studies on that as well. Maybe let me pause for a minute and let you ask a question or two, Jonathan.
Well, so, I mean, one of the things that I find fascinating about this is, you know, it always takes science a minute to catch up with what God has already revealed in his word, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, all the way back to the very beginning when God was establishing his ways and his laws for his people is when he said this, when he said the sins of the father will be passed to the third and fourth generation. But I love the fact that the rest of the verse says, but to the righteous, to a thousand generations. So there's a sense in which when we start getting to the intervening stuff and start looking at what is the impact of a man when he says, I want to get serious about the whole man recovery, which is what we're talking about here. It's not just about changing behaviors, but saying there are things that were passed on to me that are part of my brokenness and my woundedness that also need healing and attention, so that when that trajectory changes, we can see that there can be an impact far beyond just three or four generations, but it might be able to actually go to a thousand generations. So I just love the fact that you're starting to point out some of these things. But I think one of the things that really I think strikes a chord with me, and I'd like for you to maybe address, is how much of this is happening in a on a subconscious level. In other words, when we think about what was passed to us as children, how much of that, and maybe what this research is indicating, is this was not happening on a conscious level. In other words, I wasn't in the moment going, you know what, I think I'm experiencing generational trauma, or you know what, I think I'm... So can you talk a little bit about just how vital that is to an understanding? If a man's going to start going on this healing journey and start to try to understand some of this trauma, that there's going to need to be an addressing of this at a much deeper level than just behavior or just, hey, it's very easy to see cause effect here in terms of my addiction. Can you, how does some of this address that this is happening much, much deeper than just what we can see on a surface behavior or maybe symptom?
Yeah, thank you. I think one of the most beautiful things we can do in recovery is learn and grow about ourselves. Whether that is what we know we're doing specifically, you know, what we plan to do, but how we subconsciously think. And when scripture talks about taking every thought captive, is he only talking about the conscious thoughts? Or is he also talking about the subconscious thoughts? And the more we are, the more we fight for our recovery, the more we learn and grow, the more our subconscious becomes obedient to the spirit that's within us. So no longer am I simply having a reaction, or if I'm beginning to feel that reaction, whatever the stimulus is, whether my reaction is anger, or I'm going to shout, or I'm going to yell, or I'm going to be offended, or you name the situation, I'm going to experience anxiety. We begin to learn to say, I am feeling this. Why am I feeling that? Well, I don't know, because it's a it's sort of the subconscious thing that happened. But the more I dig into that, the more I can unveil what is hidden. And that's, to me, one of the beautiful, most beautiful things about recovery is you begin to learn more about not only what your thought, let me start that over again. One of the things I love about recovery is that we truly begin to dive not only into our conscious thought, but our subconscious thoughts as well. And we surrender them to the will of God. But we're also practicing behavior and thought in recovery. We're practicing techniques. We're practicing spiritual disciplines. And the more we practice, the more we take control over our thought life. here's one of the crazy things about these studies is that they found a significant intervention for generational trauma by simply teaching parents to imagine the thoughts and feelings and desires and intentions of their own children. So if your child, you know, you have a baby and they cry, and maybe that was not something you really grew up understanding how to deal with, or maybe a two-year-old is having a meltdown and maybe your first reaction was, oh my goodness, you're embarrassing me, right? Or whatever it is, oh, stop that, you know, whatever it is. But they were taught to imagine the thoughts, feelings, and desires, intentions of that child. What's going on? What's happening? What's part of this meltdown? And just by doing that, and in the grocery store example might not be the perfect example, but children have big emotions, right? Just by doing that, they found that those children, when they come back and measure their brains years later, compared to their counterparts, their brains were better formed. They had all the behavioral problems that would typically show up in these high-risk kids. They didn't have that. Instead, they were comparable to kids that came from great homes, great economics, etc., even though they came from at-risk homes.
Mm-hmm.
So literally, when we practice being mindful as in recovery, then we can also be mindful of what our children or grandchildren are experiencing and feeding that back in a more gentle way, a more authoritative way that says, I'm here to help you. Let's talk about that. Can you use some words to tell me what you're feeling? And in doing that, it helps combat the generational trauma that you would have expected to see.
Yeah. As you're saying that, I'm like, there's so many of these things that are interlinked when you're talking about that particular mindfulness. Well, that's connected to attunement, and that's connected to emotional regulation.
Yes.
And I just think it's important to state this. It's likely that for a lot of our listeners, that if they went into their recovery journey, finally trying to address whatever it is that their unwanted sexual behavior was, they might not have ever heard any of those terms on the front end of their recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Attunement, so, okay. Emotional regulation, mindfulness. And yet I think it's so important that these are the things that need to be addressed when you're talking about, if you want to go beyond just sobriety, mm-hmm. and say, no, I want to recognize that, number one, this is relational. Number two, that this is generational. Number three, that there's impact that can go far beyond just my own, like, clean character. And so can we start to talk about that, of what does this start to actually look like in a person's recovery journey? And why is it important to have this generational mindset as we are traveling through our recovery journey?
Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, one of the things that you teach, that I teach in my small groups, is can you, I love this, Dr. Eddie Capirucci says this all the time, can you just slow everything down? Because there are times when we hit a stimulus and want to react. And maybe in the past when someone cut you off in traffic, and you felt that you had a right to be in that lane, and they put you in danger, your initial reaction is probably you think it's anger. But the truth is, that is actually fear, because you had no control over that situation. You're feeling a sense of loss of control, maybe fear of being hurt, having financial loss, whatever those, and then comes the anger. So when we can pause and slow things down a little bit, then can we react differently in our lives and live in more peace? Can we sit with our emotions when they're uncomfortable? When I feel lack of self-worth or anger or frustration or anxiety, can I sit with that and go, I can name that feeling. I know what I'm feeling. And I think, you know what? I'm having trouble dealing with this feeling on my own. I can call Jonathan and we can talk about that together. That's what our allies are for in this recovery journey. And so when we're able to process these things, we're doing some things that are very specific that I think are really cool because they pair as well in these studies. Can we physically and mentally calm down in a recovery? Are we learning to physically and mentally calm down? Can we pay greater attention to the world around us? Have you ever gone for a mindful walk and you see five things and think about four things you hear and three things that you smell? It's called mindful walking, right? And you're living in the moment. Here's what they found. That when children grow up with physical and mental capability to calm down, pay attention, handle stress, they're at lower risk of a multitude of struggles in relationships, in academics, and in their future parenting. The means that you are learning to physically and mentally calm yourself, and by modeling that for your children and your grandchildren, helps alleviate the generational curse. We can interrupt the pain and trauma that has been passed down.
Yeah. What do you think are some of the roadblocks or challenges for especially men that are, you know, being invited to step into some of these activities like mindfulness, emotional regulation, even the idea of something as simple as slow everything down? What are some of the challenges to maybe a little bit of that shift in thinking when it comes especially to recovery? Because so much of recovery is still, I think, in the there's a traditional sense in like sobriety is what you need to be after. Just stop doing these behaviors. Mm-hmm. And this goes to a whole nother level. So what do you think are some of the roadblocks for guys engaging this level of recovery?
Man, that is such a good question. And it's so, there's so many layers to it, right? One is our own knowledge base. We only know what we know. And we have to be willing to dive a little deeper, to learn, we have to grow. And you might say, Sam, I don't like to read. Well, listen to an audiobook. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of good resources from Be Broken and others that can really books you guys recommend as well that can really help us dive a little deeper and understand, and you can learn. That's part of it. I think we also have to overcome what was passed down to us verbally. How about something as simple as children are to be seen and not heard? That's the mother's job. There are so many things that we have practiced generation after generation that is having a negative impact. So rather than continuing that, we need to do something different, but we have to learn what that is.
And maybe those can be categorized as shame lies. So there's probably going to be a lot of shame lies to overcome to get to this deeper level. You mentioned one earlier that I think is really important, and I think it's a cousin to shame, is fear. Fear of the unknown. Like you're telling me I have to start tapping into understanding my emotions. I only know happy, mad, sad. Like, and you're telling me there's more to understand there, right? So, some of it could be fear and shame that it's like, can't I just do the task list, stop these behaviors, and everything will be good? And from what I'm hearing from you and some of this research is if we don't go to this deeper level, we will only be passing on the generational curse that we have. So even if we get quote unquote behaviors sort of lined out, if I'm not willing to go to this emotional depth, I'm going to pass on that emotional handicap to That's my right. children and their children. So let's talk about what are your thoughts on that? And then we can talk about, let's get practical about how this looks and maybe some resources and tools that Covenant Eyes even has in some of this.
One of the biggest barriers, I believe, is our own pride. That it is hard to admit we're wrong. It is hard to admit we're doing things and maybe like our parents did, and maybe that wasn't the best way. Maybe there are things that our parents did that, man, I always thought my parents were pretty awesome, or my mom was really awesome, or my dad was really good, but I had these other things that maybe were trauma, but recognize that, there are some patterns that I haven't looked, that I've been so protective over that I haven't been willing to look at. But I think it's also can be our personal pride that we do not want to admit we're wrong. That maybe we're so caught up in the way we've done things over and over again that the patterns are setting the pace for our life rather than us consciously creating new patterns for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So before we get to maybe some resources that you guys have and that you would suggest in this field, I'm thinking about the guy that's listening and he's going, okay, you're hitting a nerve here, Sam, because either you know, I've been in recovery for a little while and some behaviors are getting under control, but I'm realizing there's a gap here. There has been something missing. I'm not going to those deeper levels. And maybe he's feeling some of that fear or shame or doubt about whether he can do that. What just word of encouragement would you give to the guy that's either feeling stuck or scared, maybe about taking the deeper step to deal with some of these generational issues?
You know, you're not alone in this. Everybody's got hurts. Every family has hurts and hangups. They pass on pain. That's just, we're fallen. We're broken people. We're going to do that. One of the things I've done specifically as a dad is gone to my kids and said, let's talk about the ways that I've hurt you, because it's important that we uncover that and unveil that and let me know how you feel. And because of, I've been willing to shut up and listen, I think they've had opportunities to experience greater healing than I ever got to do with my dad, who said, when I said, hey, I've got these things, these struggles that I deal with in our relationship. And his response was spiritual bypassing, or he blamed it on my mom. You know, your mother turned you against me, those kinds of things. Or even though they were still married, you know, all those years. Or that all I wanted to do was please God. That was another thing that he would say. Whatever it is, typically a lot of parents have a hard time saying, oh, more than I did the best I could. What you need to do is sit back and listen and say, tell me more about that. That sounds hurtful. That sounds painful. Man, I am so sorry that happened. And instead of just making a bunch of excuses and spiritual bypassing, etc., bring healing to their life. And you'll be surprised at how much healing it'll bring to yours. I think another thing that a man can do is get in a true recovery small group, where that's Gateway to Freedom that Be Broken does. Covenant Eyes is doing online coaching small groups. And in those groups, you are going to meet a new honesty that doesn't happen in your typical church Bible study. It just doesn't. These are the places where you can get raw and honest and real, and you get to learn from other guys who are being real and honest and real. And man, is that a gift. Because let's face it, you know, we'd say, well, I'm going to Bible study and I'm doing my small groups and those kinds of things. That's good. Keep doing that. But honestly, often it doesn't create an atmosphere of safety where people can go, here I am in all my sin and all my struggles and all my pain and all my conflicts. And I'm just being totally open. And you can do that in a group like Gateway to Freedom.
Well, Sam, this has been a great conversation. Even though a portion of it, you related us to ground up worms and mice, but you know, other than that, it was really good. No, seriously, this has been a good conversation. Where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about the resources that Covenant Eyes offers?
Well, the number one thing I have to recommend is download the Victory app by Covenant Eyes. It is a free app, so there's no expense. Download Victory, and within there are 50 courses that walk you through, how did I get here? Why do I seem to stay stuck? How can I take meaningful steps toward freedom? What are the, you know, you'll be able to dive in some of these deeper emotional things we talk about, self-regulation. What are some things, how can I, if I find myself struggling or acting out, how can I examine that and recognize what's driving that? What is pushing me toward that? And so there's just great tools in there. Take advantage of them. It's all free.
Yeah. Well, Sam, as always, thank you for being part of the program and just sharing your wisdom with us. So thanks.
Thank you, Jonathan. Always good to be with you.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to put those links to the Victory app and some other links that will help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. If you got more questions or you want more help in taking your next best step, please reach out to us. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.